Welcome to the Undisputed Podcast. I'm your host, Jenny Taft. This podcast is a condensed version of today's episode of Undisputed, handpicked with the best segments and discussions. Skip, Shannon, let's go.
Welcome back to Undisputed. So Kevin Durant was expected to miss this entire season while recovering from his Achilles injury. But with the NBA season potentially returning with a later end date, there has been speculation if Durant could play. In February, KD's business partner hinted he might have been ready for the Olympics when they were originally scheduled for July. However, backtracked in March, saying he assumed KD would not return this year. So Shannon, if KD and Kyrie play, how far would the Nets go with probably a shortened postseason situation?
Skip, I think the biggest thing for them would be chemistry. How do they play without stepping over each other? They have some good pieces right now, Dinwiddie, Caris LeVert, Joe Harris. They have guys, Skip, that fill a nice role. They have some nice role players. Obviously, if KD and Kyrie were to come back, they would be inserted into the starting lineup, and then you'd have a nice second unit also, Skip. That the hardest thing for me, Skip, is to see how would these guys play together, because basically you'd be just throwing them into the fire. Now, we don't know how many regular season games they're going to play to finish this regular season out. Are they going to play 5? Are they going to play 10? Are they going to get in all 20? And then the playoff starts, Skip. Is it going to be the best 3 out of 5? I don't think it'll ever be go back, Skip. You remember it used to be 2 out of 3 in the first round, but maybe 3 out of 5 for the first 2 rounds and then the best of 7 for the conference championships and obviously for the NBA finals. So that would be my concern, because Rich Kleiman, KD's business partner, said something very interesting. He would possibly be able to return for the Olympics that were going to start in July, but then said he didn't really know. He didn't see a scenario where KD would return for the regular season or the playoffs. So, Skip, I think they're a little concerned. They don't want to chance this thing. I think that was just wishful thinking, pie in the sky. I don't really think KD would have played in the Olympics, even if the Olympics had were to have gone off in late July of 2020. So, Skip, could they do some damage? Yes. They might would be the second best team in the East, still would have their hands full with Milwaukee, but I think they could potentially run through everybody else. Philly still have some issues going on. Right now, probably the third best team would probably be the Boston Celtics, might cause them some problems, and the Miami Heat. But I would say they would be the second best team, second or third best, no worse than third in the East. I still give Milwaukee a slight edge.
I agree with your conclusion. I'm just going off a gut feeling. All I've seen, heard, read, and what I know about an Achilles rehab, I believe he's going to play in abbreviated playoffs and with, as to your point, an abbreviated close to the regular season. I think he is 100% healed, because you know and I know that a whole year's time is plenty of time to heal the Achilles. It's dangerous.
Correct.
It's the scariest one of all. It's hard because you're calf atrophies, as you know, and you have a hard time getting the strength back in the Achilles side leg. And yet, by all accounts, from all the videos that I've seen him post, he looks great. I think he's anxious to play. He told the U.S. Olympic Team Selection Committee, put his name in the hat, that he wanted to be considered, depending on how his Achilles was doing. So that was the first note that encouraged me. And then even lately, I've seen Frank Isola, one of the top NBA reporters, report, I think on ESPN, he believes that both Kevin and Kyrie will play in whatever playoffs we have. I saw Brian Windhorst on ESPN say that he's leaning toward believing that Kevin will play. So the point is, and the question is, what if he and Kyrie do play? Well, I agree with your chemistry angle, because the only thing that would separate the Bucks then from the Nets is just that Kevin and Kyrie haven't played enough together, and they haven't played enough together with the supporting cast. And to your point, I think the supporting cast is pretty good, because Dinwiddie is just a natural born scorer.
Yeah.
Dinwiddie's averaging 21 a game. Now they're 30 and 34. They're in the seventh spot. They haven't been very good. They've been mediocre at best. But Caris LeVert, He's like a ticking time bomb of a score. He recently went off for 51, and then he had a 34 recently. So he can score in bunches. And then all we know Joe Harris is. He won a three-point shooting contest at the All-Star weekend. He's making 41% of his threes now. He can really shoot it. And then you didn't mention Jared Allen. He's averaging 10 rebounds a game. And don't forget, DeAndre Jordan is still there, and he's averaging 10 rebounds a game. Those two guys can protect the rim. I still believe Kevin is the best player on the planet. We saw him win back-to-back finals MVPs, and then it looked like he was all but on the way to winning another MVP and completely turning around the Toronto series a year ago, and that happened. The Achilles went. First it was the calf, then it was the Achilles. And yet you saw a big extended flash of, oh, there he is. That's Kevin Durant. Kyrie only played 20 games this year, but he was really good in those 20 games. He averaged 27.4, and he was making 39.4% of his three-point shots, going on 40% from three. That'll work. And he and Kevin, as you know, are oddly sort of soulmates. Kevin chose the Nets only because Kyrie said, hey, let's go to the Nets. And Kevin seemed to be like, okay, wherever you say, I'll go. And now they do have a rapport off the court. Could they establish one on the court? Probably pretty quickly. So I'm with you. Mm-hmm. That team would all of a sudden look loaded enough that it could at least challenge the Bucks to win some kind of a playoff tournament. And then on the other side, we got LeBron versus Kawhi and the Clippers. I don't know. I would favor Kawhi slightly and the Clippers slightly over LeBron. But, hey, would you rule out Kevin Durant shocking the world and winning it all? I wouldn't. He's too good. And he's fresh. And he loves Kyrie. And they get along so great together. I would not. I wouldn't count or write off this team. I wouldn't count them out or write them off.
Well, Skip, he's progressed to 3-on-3. At some point in time, he's going to have to play 5-on-5. He's going to have to put himself in a situation, Skip, where he really push off that leg. He really's driving. He's getting up and down the court. And the thing is, Skip, okay, when he gets tired, how many minutes are you going to play him? Is he going to be on a minutes restriction? Are you going to play him 15, 20, 25, 30 minutes a night, Skip? And all that goes into it, and the chemistry issue, because Skip, if they had played together, okay, I was like, okay, they know each other, they played together, but playing each other for a brief time, Skip, in the Olympics, you know, 4 years ago, is something entirely different to having a guy on your team and trying to, and what, not only blend that guy in, but you got to try to blend these other guys. And as you mentioned, Dinwiddie has a 50-point game. Caris LeVert has a 50-point game. Kyrie had a 50-point game this season. We know KD can get 50. He got 50 in a playoff game, last year against the Clippers. So you got four guys that potentially could go off at any point in time and give you 50. The point is, Skip, somebody's going to have to be accepting a role of coming off the bench. Now, I'm starting to feel myself, you know, Caris LeVert said, hey, I broke my leg, came back early. I'm showing you what I can do. Dinwiddie is saying, I'm showing you what I can do. Skip, I'm sorry. All four of those guys are not going to be in the starting lineup. Somebody's going to have to say, you know what? I got to swallow my pride. I got to be – somebody's going to have to be Lou Williams. It's as simple as that, Skip. Somebody's going to have to be Lou Williams, sacrifice, come off the bench, and be offense. And like I said, I would say that at worst case, Skip, even with the chemistry issues, third best team in the East right now. Boston is playing really, really well, and we know what Milwaukee represent. But – anybody else can be had, Skip. Anybody else can be had. They got enough bigs to throw at Joel Embiid. DeAndre Jordan, as you mentioned, Allen, they can throw a big body at him. Miami has tenacity. They're going to shoot a bunch of threes. But would I take them in a five-game series over the Nets, especially if KD comes back and gets some time in the regular season and gets some timing down? I would not.
All I know is what you've always agreed with, which is Kevin Durant is a 7-foot monster with 8-foot reach. I've never seen anything like him before. He shoots it up so high. We're about to talk about, here in just a few minutes on the show, we're going to talk about Larry Bird, who shot the ball way back over his head. Well, Kevin Durant shoots it way up over his head, at 7 feet tall. It is literally unblockable. And when he's on, it is literally unstoppable. He can also play defense. He can protect the rim. And he shocked me in the first big go-round with the Warriors against LeBron. I thought he would crumble under the pressure and expectation and the NBA world on the edge of its seats to watch him fall on his face because he had left Oklahoma City, which had a 3-1 lead on Golden State, and joined forces with the Warriors. And yet he rose and shone in game three in LeBron's house in back-to-back finals. He took those games over, and that's when I sat back and said, this guy is really special. I think he is right now. I believe he's eclipsed LeBron as the best player on the planet. He's been out of sight, out of mind this year, so he isn't even in those kind of discussions. But I believe he would bounce back quickly and forcefully. And you'll see a rejuvenated Kevin outside of the confines of all the internal squabbling that he was having with Draymond, obviously, and some to some degree with Steph. In Golden State, I think you'd see a healthy and happy Kevin excited to play. And Shannon, I got to tell you, I'm so starved for basketball. I can't help but the hair standing up on the back of my neck just talking about Kevin Durant back on a basketball court. It would be great for the NBA. It would be great to have any basketball back. I would take the G League right now, but to have Kevin and Kyrie back together on a basketball court with games that really mattered. We just snap our fingers. Voila, playoffs. Let's go. I can't wait. And again, the Achilles happened in June. He tore it in June. So it will be over a year after that happened. I think he would be just fine. Surgery on Achilles has gotten better and better. I believe he would be 1,000% okay.
Yeah, Skip, and you said that Kevin Durant is really unorthodox. KD will do what you least expect him to do. Skip, nobody expected him to sign with the Warriors until he did it. No one really thought he was going to sign with the Nets until he did it. And so him playing would not surprise me because, like you said, it's been a year. The question is, Skip, how many minutes and how soon is they going to pick the 3-on-3 and let it be full court? Because at some point in time, Skip, you know, it's like, yeah, I'm shooting these jumpers. That thing feel good. You're going to have to push off, Skip.
Yep.
You're going to have to make a sudden, because remember, Skip, that's what got it.
I agree.
He made a sudden move, and it went. He was good. I mean, when he was just raising up and shooting, it was fine. It was when he put the ball on the floor and made that sudden move that you saw it roll up the back of his leg. So with that being said, I'm going to see how soon he progresses to 5-on-5. But like I said, Skip, at worst case scenario, they're the third best team. If they come back, key Kyrie comes back, I believe they'll be the third best team in the East. Now, can they gain enough ground? Skip, I didn't look at the standing before we started. We know they're not catching. They're not catching Milwaukee. Milwaukee is too far gone. There's not enough games to go. I don't believe they can catch Boston. Yep. Boston is one in the 40-plus game. So I don't know. But Miami and Philly, oh, y'all could get got. Y'all definitely could get got with KD and Kyrie coming back.
Shannon, if he got in shape by the time they reached, let's just say, a round against Milwaukee, I don't even know which round it might be, but if he were in shape, he's better than Giannis. I believe he would outplay Giannis on both ends of the floor, and Giannis is really good on both ends, but he's not Kevin Durant. So I say on sheer firepower, Kevin and Kyrie are better than anything I believe that Milwaukee can throw back at them. Milwaukee's got chemistry, unity, defensive stability, but they don't have Kevin and they don't have Kyrie. And I would, if they're in shape and in sync, I would pick the Nets to upset the Bucks.
Well, Skip, the thing is that what the Nets do have, you know, they can build that wall. They got those bigs. They got Allen. They got Jordan. They got KD. So you just got to be able to keep Giannis out the paint, force him to shoot threes, force him to shoot outside. And if you can do that, because he's coming downhill, Skip, he's going to do everything he possibly can to Euro step you off the ball to get down into the paint, get easy buckets. If you can keep him out like Toronto did, you got a chance. But if you don't keep that kid away from the basket, Oh, he gonna get dropped 35 and 20.
Yeah. Ah, sure make things interesting if he did return, if we could get a little basketball back. We're all just keeping our fingers crossed. No mercy. Hey, Undisputed listeners, time for some exciting news. Fox Sports Digital, the team that produces this podcast, has been nominated for a Webby Award for our coverage of the 2019 FIFA Women's World Cup in Paris. I was there covering the U.S. Women's National Team's incredible run as repeat champs. C'était vraiment incroyable. It was truly such an amazing opportunity and experience. So many stories I was lucky enough to help tell. If you enjoyed our work, we'd love it if you could visit vote.webbyawards.com. That's vote.webbyawards.com to support our entries. Fox Sports was nominated for Best Overall Social Coverage for our nightly show, Fox Sports World Cup Now, and for a digital feature we produced on Brandi Chastain, who looks back 20 years later on her famous PK that won the 1999 Women's World Cup. Thanks again, Undisputed listeners. We appreciate your voting consideration. And now, back to the show. No mercy. While the GOAT debate between MJ and LeBron rages on everywhere and every day, Kendrick Perkins said that off the court there is no debate, and LeBron is the greatest of all time in that department. Shannon, you've mentioned this before, but do you agree with your guy Perk?
Yeah, Skip, when we're talking about basketball players, I'm assuming now, and I'll go broader in a second, but Skip, when you look at what LeBron has done in his communities, the I Promise School, his ability to speak out on issues that normally athletes wouldn't touch, especially, we just stick with the NBA. The Trayvon Martin, it was he that started wearing the hoodies. Skip, think about this. Trayvon Martin probably lost his life because he had a hoodie, and all the NBA uniforms now have hoodies. Let that sink in for just a second. So he spoke out on that. We've seen him speak out on other issues. We see his stump for Hillary Clinton. I mean, people might, take Tom Brady. Tom Brady had a Make America Great hat and tried to say, oh, that thing's just a prop. He wanted to deny it. Almost like Peter did Jesus when Jesus told him, you're going to deny me three times before the cocks crow. He's like, I would never do that, Jesus. And show and behold, when they came, I don't know that man, Tom Brady. Oh, that's just a prop. That ain't nothing. LeBron James, like, I'm on stage. We need to put this woman in office. So, Skip, he's taking chances that other athletes before him would never take it because that brand, because it might become, as Michael famously said, the other party buys sneakers also. So for him to take the stand that he, and I think because he's done it, we've seen other guys do it. We've seen other athletes in basketball and in other professional sports take opportunities to say their political affiliation or take, tweet out where we see injustices going on in our community. We'll see guys tweet that and say, what a miscarriage of justice. Whereas before, Skip, guys would not even, wouldn't say a thing on that. For me, Skip, it's just hard for me to put someone ahead of Muhammad Ali, ahead of Jackie Robinson, given the times, because you have to realize when Jackie did what he did, I think it was in 47, Skip, and Ali did what he did in the 60s, Skip. In the 60s was the height of the civil rights. It didn't get any more combustible than that. And the man says, I'm not going to kill someone that's done nothing to me when it's the people right here that's turning their dogs, putting their water holes, denying me and others that look like me equal rights, civil rights. He's like, I'm not doing that. For what? And you know what? Do what you want to do. You want these belts? Take them. You want to take my career? Take it. But I'm not going. Steal. And Jackie and Mr. Robinson having to come up, Skip, when they were the insults that he had to go through, and people would say things and spit on him and do certain things towards him. It's hard for me to put LeBron in front of them, but I think those guys made it easier for LeBron because he says there is the right, it's always the right time to say and do the right thing. And I think it's made it easier for LeBron. But if we're talking about basketball players, it's hard for me to say someone is bigger than LeBron. Now, Kareem, Skip, you got to realize, Kareem was at the summit in Cleveland, Skip, as a college player. People don't realize, Kareem was there.
He was.
With Ali, with Jim Brown, with some of the all-time greats. He was there. So, but Skip, I don't think he's been as outspoken on certain issues. Now, behind the scenes, we know what he converted to the Muslim faith. But LeBron James, Skip, it's not even close. It's not even close. And I think that's the vast difference between he and Mike.
Okay. This is deep and complex, but
it is.
Allow me to make the point, and I think you would agree, every opportunity I've had on this show, as critical as I've been of LeBron on the court, I have applauded him mm-hmm. off the court for the many Absolutely. Powerful stances he has taken against racial injustice and mm-hmm. social injustice. And the I Promise School is legendary to me, what he has done off the court. All of that right. is correct. But when our man Kendrick Perkins goes to the point of it's not even a debate that he is, LeBron is the GOAT off the court, man, Perk, be careful there because Shannon makes strong, great points. You're eliminating a lot of history. And one name you didn't invoke that I want to throw into the mix here, Shannon, the great Bill Russell was also at that summit right. backing Ali that Correct. Day in Cleveland.
Yes.
And
yes.
Mm-hmm. just remember, Bill Russell was the first black superstar in the NBA, and he was breaking through in a city of Boston that did have a racist component to it. Let me just go that far. And then Bill
he
Russell became
firsthand.
The first black. He did. Bill Russell, first black head coach, because he was obviously the player coach for 3 years of the Celtics. So he was even yep. that. And finally, he was a powerful member and force in the Black Power movement, who was constantly mm-hmm. outspoken against racism to the all-white media in Boston. Well, that's mm-hmm. that's breakthrough, man. That is, you are threatening your very career, which brings us back to
right.
Kareem. He didn't have a loud voice, but he had a strong voice. He didn't Correct. Scream it, but he said it softly and he said it powerfully. Mm-hmm. And he even went so far as to say about Michael Jordan, and I've never defended Jordan off the court, but he said of Michael Jordan, he chose commerce over conscience. Well, that's mm-hmm. a deep, powerful way to say what the truth was.
Yes.
And
yes.
Then we get to Muhammad Ali, and just allow me to come on top of what you said, just to amplify a little bit what you said, because Ali was my all-time favorite athlete. And I was growing up in the 60s while he was taking charge in the 60s. And he joins the Nation of Islam because he did not want to carry on with what he called his slave name, Cassius slave. Clay.
Correct.
And then mm-hmm. he chose not to join the military and risk his career. And to your point, LeBron's never actually risked his whole career to take a stand
right.
the way Ali did.
Right.
And he said, I got no quarrel with them Viet Cong, and he didn't. And so he said, right. I believe in my faith so deeply, I don't want to go fight in Vietnam. I don't believe in
right.
it. And an all-white jury convicted him of draft dodging, and he didn't go to jail,
right.
but he went into exile. And what did he do, right. Shannon? For 3 years of his prime, he could not box. He lost three prime right. years of earning power and legacy building, mm-hmm. and he went on
yes.
tours of America speaking at colleges against the Vietnam War when it was not fashionable to speak
right.
out against it, and
no.
to campaign against racism in America. It was
yes.
powerful. This it was not fashionable. He didn't have Twitter or Instagram. He didn't have anybody else on his side from the black community doing
nope.
exactly what he was in athletics. I mean, he had Dr. King
right.
until he was assassinated,
right.
obviously. But the point was
right.
Ali was breaking ground and losing. He lost his career for three long years and then came back with a fury, and it was sensational to watch. But yeah, you're right. Even Colin Kaepernick, if I can bring it up to contemporary times, Colin mm-hmm. risked his career and he lost yes. it to take a stand.
Right.
So as many great things as LeBron has done, he hasn't gone to the point of having to risk not having basketball anymore. And I'm not trying to diminish any way, shape, or form what LeBron has done, but man, that's right. that's powerful when you're going to risk everything right. to take a stand. Right. That's when you, right. you put your money where your mouth is. And those people
yeah,
did.
Yeah, Skip, because, yeah, and Skip, you have to understand that when guys were, when he did what he did, Muhammad Ali was very unpopular. He was even unpopular in the black community because there were other black men that had to sign up for the draft and they had to go fight.
Fight.
So
yeah.
he was not popular.
Agreed.
Even like Dr. King, it's funny, Skip, how it comes. Skip, I think the thing for me, I think it really changed for Muhammad Ali, and he had done great. When people saw him light the torch in Atlanta in 1996, he was no longer the guy that was quick-witted, Skip, and had all those, could get into the verbal jarring matches and have everybody laugh, make everybody laugh. They looked at him and said, what this man endured, he's lighting a torch. That's what this is about. Now, all of a sudden, he became a sympathetic figure because at the time, he was castigated. Nobody was talking about Muhammad Ali in the term. Nobody thought. I guarantee you, Muhammad Ali probably, if you probably ask his wife, Lonnie, did Muhammad think he would be what he became later in life? It would be very interesting to hear us yep. say, what when he was doing what he was doing, did he think he would become this beloved figure? I can assure you, Dr. King had no idea he was going to become beloved, because Skip, everybody, even people that were against him, quote him now. It's the same thing with Ali. Mm-hmm. Skip, LeBron has been unbelievable. I don't know if we've seen an athlete this big, obviously, Skip, because now you have all these media platforms. So, you know, Arthur Ashe, Skip, we forgot about Arthur Ashe. We forgot about him and what his implied, what he went Good through. One. But Skip, yep. LeBron James, as far as basketball, and now in today's time, yeah, Skip, it's hard for me to see someone bigger than he is and taking a more outspoken stance.
I got it. Can I please add one more name to the list? I don't know if people yes. remember Craig Hodges. I know you do, Shannon. Because he played with Michael Jordan on his first two championship teams. And
yes.
3 years ago, Craig Hodges wrote a book called The Triumphs and Struggles of an NBA Freedom Fighter. In 91, mm-hmm. before Michael played in his first finals against Magic, because of the Rodney King beating here in the LA area at the hands of four white police officers, Craig mm-hmm. Hodges encouraged Michael and Magic to boycott game one of the finals, take a stand for the black community and racial injustice, social injustice. And he says in the book that Michael just flat out told him that's crazy, and that Magic told him that's just too extreme. And Craig said his response was, what's happening to the black community right now is very extreme. And because of Correct. His outspoken stances against Michael and the league, after another year and one more championship, he basically got, as you call it, whiteballed from the league, and his career was over at age 32. And remember, he's one of the greatest three-point shooters ever. He won three straight three-point contests at All-Star Weekend. So there's another name of a guy who risked his career to try to make a statement. He wasn't a star, but he risked it all.
And remember, Skip, he said that he actually tried to give, if I'm not mistaken, I forget who the president was at the time. It might have been 91, 92.
Bush.
So it might have been.
First Bush.
Bush.
Yes.
Bush. First. Yeah, yeah. The
yes,
dad.
The first.
And he tried to. Because Skip, remember, everybody said, well, instead of just being so outspoken, why don't you go sit down with the president and try to talk to him? He said, I did that. He said, I tried to take him. But Skip, I didn't go, but they tell you what you can and can't do. You are not to pass anything. You are not to have any isolated conversation. So they nip all that in the bud. So this notion, well, take something and talk to the president, that's not happening. It's a photo op. That's what you're going there for. Take the picture, get up out of there. Because normally, Skip, they got like five or six other groups that's coming in to take photo ops also. So they're not, it's great.
Right.
But I agree, Craig Hodges, and he has some very outspoken things to say about Mike.
Yeah, and remember, when he went to the White House after the first championship, he wore a dashiki to make that statement.
He did.
Whew, powerful discussion, guys. Good stuff all around from both of you.
No mercy.
So NFL.com ranked how vulnerable each division champ was coming into this season. The Packers took the top spot despite going 13-3 and reaching the NFC Championship game. Right behind Green Bay at 2 were the Eagles due to the competitiveness of the NFC East. So Shannon, do you agree with this?
Man, Gil really extended himself. Skip, you know Gil a long time. I know Gil. I see him every year. I go back to the Super Bowl. Gil is, I think, 87 years of age. He was the one that built the Cowboys team. He drafted Bob Lilly, Michael Irvin, Randy White, all those greats. So Gil's resume is impeccable, Skip. But I think the thing for me, when I look at it, I can see Green Bay. And it's not because of what happens on the field. I think they got some turmoil brewing, Skip. I think they created something that didn't need to be created, and I think it's going to be a problem. And in each one of these teams, there's only one team, I really think. When you look at it, I think it's Minnesota. I don't think I don't think Chicago. I don't think Detroit is a threat. Philly, I think the only threat is the Cowboys. But Cowboys, they win. Skip, you already know what y'all going to do. It breaks my heart to know that you're going to be disappointed again. You think I like this, but I really don't. Because when you hurt, I hurt. And when you're hurt, I'm hurting. But I'm laughing as soon as I get from in front of you. So. Oh, you know that, huh? But I think it's Green Bay, Skip, because I think what transpired with them moving up to take Jordan Love, Skip, I think they created a problem. I really do, and I think it's going to have a rippling effect throughout that team, and I can see, yeah. So I do agree with Gil's list, number one, but Philly ain't losing that division.
Okay, let me take them one at a time. Green Bay was fluky last year. I'm still not sure how Green Bay went 13-3 and got to the NFC Championship game with what was the 15th best offense, the 15th best points scored last year. They did have a surprisingly good defense. It finished 9th in points allowed. So it was a top 10 defense, right, sort of out of left field, out of nowhere. But how many Mondays did we come in and say, we're not sure how Green Bay won that game or that one or that one? Aaron Rodgers had his career worst QBR and his career worst completion percentage. Those ranked 18th and 21st among quarterbacks, respectively. And I thought Aaron Jones was actually more valuable last year than Aaron Rodgers. Pro Football Focus ranked him 5th of the running backs. But I still say it was mostly the turnover differential. They were tied for 3rd that got them through the night and tilted the playing field occasionally in their favor when it didn't deserve to be. So, again, fluky. Do I trust Kirk Cousins? Not exactly. Foxbet has both these teams over-under on wins at 9. So they both look like 9-7-ish kind of teams. I thought Minnesota had a better draft. I like the first two picks. Yeah, I like Justin Jefferson. I like Jeff Gladney a lot out of TCU. I think those are two good first-round picks. And you're right, Aaron now has an issue hanging over his head and shoulder pads. Do they really want this kid to play sooner than later? Which brings me to another quarterback controversy, self-inflicted in Philadelphia. They draft Jalen Hurts in the second round. I think it's going to be hard on Carson Wentz. I think on paper, Dallas just got better. It's close, but the Cowboys got better. They have a better head coach. They had a better draft because I think they had the best draft. They stole CeeDee Lamb in the first round. They added pieces on defense, draft, and free agency. It just got better. I'm sorry, it did. And they went out and signed a top-5 kicker in place of the worst kicker in football last year, Brett Maher, Brett the Threat, as I called him, who had the worst stats in the league and cost them, I believe, 2 games, and they went 8-8, so they could have been 10-6. I give Dallas the edge. Now, I'm going to sum this up by saying the team most likely to fall out of the top spot is the one Gil Brandt picked at number 4, I believe the Patriots are ripe to fall. And Shannon Sharp, guess what team plays the toughest schedule next year off records from last year? New England does.
Patriots.
New England got worse. They lost Brady. They obviously didn't have Gronkowski. I kept waiting for Belichick to do something in free agency and something in the draft, and he did next to nothing. They are going forward with Jared Stidham in place of Tom Brady. Are you kidding me? I think that they're going to be lucky to finish 8-8. Buffalo is better. On paper, Miami is better now. Miami had a very good draft and a terrific free agency. And again, Ryan Fitzpatrick got hot at the end of the year. He beat the Eagles. He won at Foxborough. He went 80 yards against Belichick's defense to win the game in the last 2 minutes in Foxborough. So could they be better? They could be better. The Jets are still the Jets. I'm sorry, but they are. But when I look at the schedule, I'm looking at non-division games for the Patriots next year. The away games, they have to go to Houston, go to Kansas City, go to both LAs, big cross-country trips, go to Seattle. And at home, they have to deal with Baltimore and San Francisco on top of the Buffalo games and the Miami games. They're going to be lucky to finish 8-8. To me, they're not going to win the division. So I'd say the best odds to fall, I would put on the Patriots.
Skip, I think the biggest, but that just goes to show you, I think the number one reason why he didn't put them number one was Coach Belichick. I think the thing is he's looking at it, do I trust Sean McDermott? Do I trust the coach in Miami? Brian Flores he basically said, I trust Coach Belichick. And that depleted offense more so than I trust these other coaches, even though they've upgraded their entire team. And so that's the way I'm looking at it. But I look at Philly, Skip, they're going to get Lane Johnson back, who missed the last month. They'll get D-Jack, who missed basically all of last year. They get Alshon back. They traded for Goodwin. They traded for, they drafted Jalen Reagor. Skip, I believe they're going to be better. The tackle that they selected last year, first round, he fills in for Jason Peters. Skip, I believe they're going to be better than last year. So, yeah, they got this one in the bag. NFC East champ. Go on and send me my shirt. I'm going to give me an Eagles shirt already. NFC East champ 2020, baby. In the bag. In the money. Got it already.
Who's your starting quarterback? Who is it? Jalen Hurts?
Don't worry about all that.
Jalen Hurts is going to take you to the playoffs?
Who is your starting quarterback? Is it Andy Dalton?
Andy Dalton's going to lead us to the playoffs.
Okay.
10 wins.
Okay.
10-6. Old Dad, 10-6 Andy. I got the red rifle.
I really hope that. Okay. Oh, BB gun. That was you got. Like you told me, the musket. Oh, he the red rifle. When you were thinking about him going to New England, he was the musket. Now he the red rifle again.
Okay,
but
he's the red musket.
But I hope Dak is watching this.
Okay.
I hope Dak is watching this. Dak, you see how quick your man done turned on you, Dak. I hope you watch it.
Yeah. Get it done, Dak. Get it done.
The first thing I thought about when Jalen Hurts went to the Eagles was, how is Skip going to handle this? Because that is seriously what I was thinking about. No mercy. Charles Barkley said despite being a longtime friend of Michael Jordan's, he doesn't see the two of them reconciling anytime soon. Barkley said that MJ took offense to his critical comments about how Jordan conducted himself as a GM. Barkley said the comments were made as an analyst nearly a decade ago and that MJ has his number if he ever wanted to talk. So Shannon, do you have a problem with Michael Jordan refusing to make peace with Charles Barkley?
Skip, you should have no problem with this. Because you ain't had no problem with him not making peace with Isaiah. You ain't had no problem with that, right, Skip? Skip, it's tough. And this is what I tell people when you get into this business. And a lot of times it's hard for people, Skip, because that means you're going to have to criticize guys you played with and you played against. And everybody's not willing to do that. I was willing to do that from the jump. I'm going to tell you, I'm going to call it like I see it. And I've had guys like, man, bro, you were hard. I was like, bro, I got a job to do. You do your job, you make my job easier. You don't do your job, you still make my job easy. Because I'm going to tell it like I see it. Skip, and that's the hardest part about being being a professional athlete, because we don't like to hear that we've done something wrong or we've said something wrong. And that's why I consider myself very fortunate that I've always had friends that tell me what I needed to know, not what I wanted to hear. And Michael, you got to tell him what he wants to hear. You got to tell him you're doing an unbelievable job. Bruh, do you see the lack of success you're having in Charlotte? But Charles, there's nothing you can do. You have a job. You have a responsibility to do. You did your job. And again, remember, Skip, I told you, there can be no freedom without forgiveness. I'm sorry.
Okay. I do have some sympathy for Charles Barkley here. And I agree with your point. You do your job the right way. You do it objectively on players that you played with and against. Love that mm-hmm. about you. And I like that about Charles. He made a tough love comment about his dear friend Michael Jordan that ended their relationship because he went inside behind the scenes and said, what was the comment? Let me get it exactly here. You've got to quit hiring. Stop hiring them kiss asses is the way he put it. Okay. I've told you from the start, Michael Jordan was the greatest performer I ever saw in any sport. But some of the things that drove him were not pretty. And you're not going to get me to condemn him here today for what made him great. Yes, he was ruthless. Yes, he was heartless. Yes, he took no prisoners. And he constantly was feuding or beefing with this guy or that guy. And sometimes he fabricated a feud just to fuel him. That's what he was made mm-hmm. of. And if you were in his inner circle and you dared to cross him, you were crossed permanently off that list. There's no forgiveness in Michael Jeffrey Jordan. That's what made him great, because he played without remorse, without compunction. He did not care. He was cold-blooded. All that mattered was win at any cost. He wouldn't cheat, but at any emotional cost, he was going to beat you.
Right.
And the point here is that, do I love it? Away from basketball, what he did to Charles? No, I don't love it. But it is vintage, authentic Michael Jordan. So I'm sorry. And by the way, quick comment on Charles's comment. I don't believe that hiring kiss asses is why Michael has been the worst GM in the history of basketball. And I've often called him that. Again, you say I'm not objective about Michael Jordan, but I am about Jordan the GM. He is a pathetic picker of players, judge of talent. Yeah. And it's not because he surrounded himself with sycophants and quote unquote friends. It's because he just doesn't have a great feel for what works in players who weren't as good as him. He keeps saying, I'm Michael Jordan. Why can't you be as good as I was?
Exactly.
We can't. We're sorry. We can't.
Right.
So he's been the owner and operator of the Charlotte franchise for 13 years. They've made the playoffs four times and never won a playoff series in the NBA, where it seems like half the teams make the postseason. So again, you can't defend it, but I will defend Michael for just being Michael. It's not pretty. It's kind of ugly. But in sum total, it made for the greatest player or performer in the history of sports. I've never seen anything like Michael Jordan, and this was why. And Shannon, I witnessed him fabricate feuds. One night with Vashawn Leonard, the Heat in January of the last dance year, 98, Vashawn Leonard's Heat had taken apart the Bulls in Miami. It was 90-72, and the return match was in February at the United Center, and somehow Michael decided that it was Vashawn who had mouthed off in Miami. And I don't think he had. So every free throw that Miami shot that night, every free throw Miami shot that Vachon went back to be back on defense and stand at the far free throw line, Michael didn't occupy his space in the lane for the Bulls. He went back with Vachon, leaned over and trash-talked in his ear every free throw that Miami shot and basically told him, you ain't you know what. And how do you think you can guard me? And he torched Vachon Leonard for 37 points. Well, that's just Jordan. It was ruthless. It was heartless. It was actually just wrong. But that's who he was, and that's why he was.
Skip, if we're friends and you tell me something that you believe is for my best interest, I'm not going to get upset. Now, Skip, if you divulge a secret, something that only my closest friends know, yeah, I'm going to forgive you. We just not going to be on that level of friends. I'm going to go my way. You go your way. But I, Skip, I think Barkley offering an honest assessment of why he thinks Michael is not as successful as a general manager as he was as a player. I don't think that's grounds for him to like, no, I can't ever speak to you again. How dare you criticize? Bruh, I got a job. You Skip, you just laid it out. 13, 14 years, four playoff appearances, never getting out of the first round. All these players, think about everybody that you drafted. Bus, 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 bus. The only guy that wasn't a bus is Kemba Walker. And because you're such a small market, you can't give him max dollars. But if you look at all the other guys, Kid Gilchrist and Adam Morrison and all these other guys, Skip, they've been bus. It's as simple as that. And so, Skip, the greater the player, I believe the greater the player, the harder it is for him to pick the talent. Because he's like, why can't you do? It was so easy for me. Yeah, that's why you were an all-time great. Because you made it look easy. Everybody can't do that. No mercy.